Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. It's a nice springy day in March. Taking my constitutional around the hill. I mean, no danger of contracting COVID-19 in this place because there's nobody about. Now at the moment, as you're no doubt aware, we're in the throes of a global pandemic, of a coronavirus, which is novel, and that means it hasn't infected the human population before, so nobody's got any immunity to it, and it's very infectious and easily transmitted by droplets in the air and by viruses on surfaces which are easily transferred to surfaces like door handles and so forth. And compared with some viruses, the fatality rate isn't that high, and the estimates vary. Some people are saying like 1%, 2%, 3%, and it seems to depend on the population, both geographically and in terms of demographic and age and so forth, as to quite how fatal it is. But certainly people with compromised immune systems or lung disease of some sort, and older people obviously, are a bit more prone to dying of this thing than the young fit people. The figure we hear bandied about is that it is about twice as fatal as flu. But if you combine the rate of infection, just how virulent it is, transmissible, and the fatality rate, the picture does look quite alarming. One commentator, whose name escapes me, but who's a professor of epidemic management somewhere and has been doing that for over 20 years, said that it was the scariest epidemic that he'd come across in his 20 years of being in the field. So whatever the exact case, it certainly needs to be taken seriously. The thing started in China, and of course China is a centralised one-party state. You know, it's an authoritarian regime, and with a populace that is culturally, for the most part, ready to go along with a degree of authoritarianism in society. So they were able to pretty well quarantine whole cities at the start of the outbreak and really lock down in a very severe way, not letting people in and out of certain areas as a means of stopping the spread of the virus. So far they seem to have some success, and say what you like about these centralised regime, but they can get on the case and do stuff when they have to. In the area of China where this virus first broke out into the human population, the authorities built a number of temporary hospitals with quite large numbers of beds, just very quickly, in just a matter of weeks. They are actually now closing those hospitals down in this area because the strategy has at least had the effect, for now, of vastly reducing the number of cases. And I think at one point there were many thousands of new cases verified in per day. And I think last week they only had 50 cases in the week, and the health services are able to cope and so forth. Now the virus of course is in the population, and there may well be other waves of cases and increasing. For now, they've saved a lot of lives for a start. Now, different countries, I mean, this thing is going, making the rounds around the world. It seems to be in most countries. This morning, New Zealand was announcing its measures, and they're going to go for a similar lockdown approach to some degree as the Chinese. The government has stopped mass gatherings, you know, football matches and so forth, and festivals, concerts and those kind of things. All those have been put on hold by government order for now. And closing the borders, more or less, and so forth, and putting into place measures to quarantine people, and all the rest of it, and being very, very proactive in containing the thing, and using state power to do it. Italy, as you know, first of all, locked down the province of Lombardy and Milan, I think, was the one of the cities that got closed down. Basically, people have to stay in the house, and not mix, and so forth. And it did spread like wildfire in northern Italy. And after a while, the whole of Italy was put on similar measures, similar draconian measures. The UK seems to be in confusion, from what I can see, in the mixed messages coming out of government. And it's pretty well the only topic of conversation on social media, from what I can see. And the Prime Minister's popularity seems to be dwindling at a very fast rate. And he just doesn't seem to be able to, I know, inspire any confidence, at least. The rumour was that the UK policy would be just to actually let the infection spread through the population to produce immunity, like maybe 80% of the population having immunity. And I mean, if the virus was just allowed to run through the population like that, it'd probably result in, who knows, but you know, 250,000 deaths or something like that. And there's also a rumour that the government's going to require everybody over 70 to stay indoors for 4 months. And this is one of the disquieting things about what's going on. On the one hand, some strong directives that people see the sense of and that will actually save lives is obviously a pretty good idea. On the other hand, if draconian measures are still in place when eventually the epidemic subsides, I think we will have need to very seriously press back against the government. Make no mistake, an authoritarian government in the UK is not, will not be a good thing, and I certainly will resist it. I mean, the other thing, of course, is that the economy is taking a huge hit, and there's lots of ways that this pans out. For a start, the stock market has crashed all over the world. It's rallied a few times and crashed a few times, but there's a huge volatility in bonds, cryptocurrency as it happens, and you might have thought that that it would have a contrary effect, but at the moment, crypto has also been wiped out, really. 50% of the value has dropped off, quite a bit of the crypto. But shares and so forth. And of course, supply chains get disrupted. If you've got a lot of workers self-quarantining, staying at home because they've got symptoms, or they've been with somebody who's actually been diagnosed as having the thing, having the viral infection, and then are required to stay at home. And of course, you know, if the epidemic really takes hold of large swathes of the population at the same time, you've got immense disruption in supply chain and production and the delivery of services, as well, of course, as people not spending money. So you've got collapsing supply and demand at the same time, potentially. And this is what the stock market's afraid of, and why people are sort of trying to take refuge in gold or cash. So it's what they call in the trade a clusterfuck. Well, they all used to order, and it does seem to be the black swan event that is bringing capitalism to its knees. I should say there's similar confusion in America, and the President Trump is just not up to the job. He's just giving out contradictory messages and all the rest of it. One of the silver linings, if there are any, in our current situation, is that this black swan event is exposing the absolute shortcomings of capitalism, of the neoliberal style of capitalism particularly, that we've had for the last 40 years pretty well globally. You're seeing it with the inability of the American fragmented, privatised, expensive healthcare system just to cope with something like a pandemic. There are many millions of people with no health insurance. What's happened to them? If they need a test, they'll have to pay for it. How much is the test going to cost? Will the federal government turn around and say, we're going to do free tests, etc., etc.? You know, you can see, it doesn't take genius imagination to picture just how inadequate that style of healthcare system is going to be. And the situation in the US, from what I can see, is pretty chaotic with regard to this thing. In the UK, the austerity of the last 10, 11 years has decimated the health service. Tens of thousands, in fact hundreds of thousands of nurses short of what is really needed. Social care has been wound down. And you imagine a lot of social care workers have to stay at home because they get this thing. They can't go to work and infect the old people because it'll kill them. But so the old people are just left there in the care home with nobody to attend to their personal care. It's making sure they get fed and washed and looked after properly and compassionately. All that's taken a huge hit with austerity and cuts. Privatisation, of course, has proceeded within the health service, even though there's still a kind of degree of central command and control, which makes the situation a little more favourable than the US situation. But nevertheless, the system would be overwhelmed if the virus really peaked and we had 20 million people ill all at one time. And there's just, again, infrastructure, productivity, services, you can see how the whole economy can barely stand a pandemic of this type, where you've got a very, very infectious agent with enough mortality to compromise the economy overall. So I'm saying, silver lining. it's hard to see anything very positive at the moment, but I would say that it really is exposing capitalism. What was trending on Twitter yesterday was hashtag Boris the Butcher, because the way he's spoken about it has been so kind of inept. And whether it's true or not that this really is the government policy, it's certainly come across as though the government's, in a kind of calculating way, willing to let people die. And in fact, we've had 10 years of, 11 years of Conservative government that have been responsible for the austerity that's made it pretty well impossible for the National Health Service to cope, given how much it's been cut and how much of its personnel have been cut. So I think they're going to take a hit, and if I was a betting man, I would mind just putting a fiver on this bringing down the Johnson Prime Ministership. Because it's only a fiver, you might lose it. I mean, we have to bear in mind how fucking tenacious and slippery the bugger is. But yet, so there is a politicisation, and now Bernie Sanders keeps rubbing the corporate Democrats and the Republicans and the corporations' noses in the inadequacy of a privatised, insurance-based healthcare system to cope with this kind of event. And similarly, we're seeing the same thing here. Now, one of the things that has interested me about this that's kind of political is that there are 8,000 beds in private hospitals in the UK. Because you are allowed to have private. You can pay for your healthcare if you want to. But if you can't, you know, there's the National Health Service. And some people do. So consequently, there are private hospitals. And there are 8,000 beds. Now, the NHS says, we need those beds for the pandemic. They're going to be people, you know, who are going to need perhaps even up to intensive care, but certainly nursing care with some of the worst cases of this virus. You know, when it infects people who don't have the resilience to throw it off, and that the healthcare industry has said they're happy for the health service to have the 8,000 beds, but they're going to charge for it. And I think it was, I don't know what the figure is, don't quote me on this, but I think around about 4 million a day. And I think Jeremy Corbyn, who's still the leader of the opposition, I think he might have come out and said, well, actually, why, you know, they should donate it. Or, and my thought was that the government should say, we're the government, we're requisitioning them, we're having them, that's it. You know, these bloody vultures, parasites. The economy's collapsing. There could be 1 million people die of this pandemic. And they're leeching the situation. Well, they make 4 million a day by letting them use these 8,000 hospital beds. If it was me, if I was in charge of Britain, I'd say, fuck you, we're having those beds, that's it. And requisition them, nationalise them straight away. And I think you've kind of lost your moral bearings if you think that is somehow some immoral act. I don't know, I suppose if you believe that the great God profit and the great God property and the great God the market is affronted by this, well, fuck it, you know. I tell you what, the market's got absolutely no fucking magic power to deal with this situation. There has to be some degree of command and control. Again, I agree, it has its own dangers, and as you can tell, I'm not going to be too happy about any authoritarian dictates over my own life. I'm willing to behave responsibly. I don't need to be dictated to, you know, and I do think there's real dangers of authoritarianism creeping here, maybe even up to and including martial law, that doesn't go away when things get sorted out. This is a real fear, and it's a real tipping point. I think, you know, the black swan has come. The instability of the systems, which I've been talking about for years, and you'll hear me repeat again and again on these podcasts, is coming home to roost with the black swan event triggering it off. So here we are, and we're on the knife edge, and the reason why it's politicised, I'm glad the thing's got politicised, is that we could go either way here. And I think if left and radicals and progressives don't take on the politicisation that's implicit in this moment, that the right will strengthen and triumph, and you know, the project of global fascism, which they're already well on with, and which they've been playing a long game on, will just advance leaps and bounds. But at the same time, it's an opportunity for the radical left, the progressive left, to underscore how the situation is really, really showing the shortcomings of capitalism when push comes to shove, and the the moral bankruptcy of market fundamentalism and the profit is God mindset. So yeah, it's terrible, but there it is. Maybe that old Sun Tzu, Dominic Cummings' favourite philosopher, maybe his adage, an opportunity, a disaster is an opportunity, maybe that we know that the right's taking heed of it, but the left needs to take heed of it too. And I think this is crucial and critical to the future flourishing of the human species. It really is. It is apocalyptic. So, wash your hands. Maybe refrain from going to raves. And organise at community level if you can. Maybe this is where the internet does come in. We can community organise without infecting each other with germs. So, but yeah, community organising, I think now the opportunity is there. I know some people in Labour are talking about that. And, I mean, partly as a means of recouping the loss of confidence in Labour that happened in the heartlands in the general election. Because of a kind of an absence of that, of that sort of grassroots self-help cooperative element in the Labour movement. And of course Blairism was precisely that, you know, it's just all you need is a parliamentary party. We'll just operate neoliberalism with a bit of a human face. And there you go, Bob's your uncle. But of course all that old left community stuff got left behind. And I mean, Labour was losing votes in the north long before Corbyn. Right the way back to the Blair era, the vote was leaching away slowly but steadily. But yeah, but now there is like a practical necessity for radicals to bang together at community level, and for those community level collectives to communicate and cooperate and coordinate at bigger levels, at county level perhaps, or you know, within the in the UK, we'd say within the nations, and then further afield, right the way into Europe and the world. And so kind of quite like DiEM25, Yanis Varoufakis's outfit. I think it has a moment now. Whether it'll, that moment will be realised into some kind of flourishing. And opening up with some real good possibilities for the human species and the human project remains to be seen. Okay, well, thank you for listening. Bit of a ramble. And I did hesitate about talking about this matter because everybody's kind of talking about it. And of course, it will be gone at some point. But it didn't have point up a lot of stuff. And a certain degree of economic chaos and health chaos can take a long time to come back from. So we will have to see. I don't have a crystal ball on this one. Anyway, thanks for listening. Over and out.